I thought I had a good day yesterday. Obviously, it's things you had to work through here and there. But overall, probably better than I expected, being able to go out there and throw the football around and get the reps in that I needed to get in.
We've been in these spots. We have the experience. We know what team we're playing, team that's been to this game the last five seasons, and they've all been in that stadium. So, to me, they're still the team to beat, and then we're coming for them.
TSN 1200.
Oh, we don't get any Niners-Eagles audio? What's up with that?
Hey, play primetime, and I'll play your clips. You don't get primetime. You get 3 o'clock.
Wow.
You're still doing chores around the farm.
You suck. Your intro sucks.
I knew I was going to get
You're fired.
There's Patrick Mahomes and Joe Burrow of the Kansas City Chiefs and the Cincinnati Bengals. We apparently...
Are the Eagles and 49ers playing, or are they just flipping a coin for who goes to the Super
apparently
Bowl?
Apparently we're not even worthy of hearing from either the San Francisco 49ers or the fighting Philadelphia Eagles, because that apparently game is in the afternoon, so it doesn't matter. Some of us may be interested, but apparently very few. Welcome back, everybody. 9:20 on this Friday morning. Time to talk some football. Time to look ahead to the conference championship weekend. And our friend, our football analyst, Duke Ellington, is on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. How are you doing this morning, Duke?
I'm still trying to understand his chores on the farm comment.
I don't get that. Why was this a shot at farmers?
That's
are they not
farmers
allowed to watch?
No, it's a shot of JR grew up on a farm, I think. Is that what it was related to, Hammer?
A little bit, but hey, they've got chores, and chores popped my head, and who's got chores on a Sunday? Well, farmers have got chores on a Sunday.
Come here, boy. I got a couple of tires you can help me with.
We don't need to ask questions, Duke. We just kind of sit back and...
Sorry, my bad.
Hi, Duke.
Hi, guys. I'm doing well. Thanks, man.
Okay. Yes. Excellent. Thank you. Okay, we're going to talk about the games in just a second. I did want to ask you about Sean, because the five coaching openings we're starting to see filled now. First one went yesterday to Frank Reich in Carolina. Sean Payton has been kind of this guy that's sort of been in the mix all along, and yet it kind of feels like he may not end up with a job at the end of the day. Part of the reason may be the compensation that's required, a first-round draft pick. Do you think that Sean Payton is worth, whatever team we're talking about, worthy of giving up a first-round draft pick for your program?
I don't. In fact, I think I would have the same answer no matter who you were asking me about. I don't believe that the impact of the head coach can be, overstated enough that you would give up. The first round draft picks are so critical in the NFL, both from having capital, draft capital if you want to spend it and trade it, or obviously to make a pick with it. So, yeah, I don't see that at all. And you know, I feel a little bit. You talked about the compensation. I do feel like he is being extraordinarily picky, which is his right, and you know, feeling like he's going to hit this massive payday, and maybe not every team is willing to do that. So I find it very interesting to see kind of how he's sitting on the sidelines observing and watching. We all kind of think that Dallas would have been a place he would love to have gone with his history there. But, yeah, I could see a scenario where maybe he doesn't latch on to a job this year.
Mm. The four other openings, because Carolina filled yesterday, and I'm doing it off the top of my head, so I'm forgetting one. Denver, Arizona, Houston, which is the one I'm forgetting? Because there are five. You have to look at this. Anyway, I'll figure it. Is there a job that you think, while I try to remember in my head, which is the which is the fourth one, is there a job that you would kind of look at and go, if you think about players that are on the roster and, you know, kind of the draft picks that may or may not be available, I know you're probably not right up to speed on cap space, et cetera, but do you look at any of those? Like, would you want to touch Denver with Russell Wilson and that contract, or would you steer clear of that?
No, I mean, I think every coach, when they look at a situation, I think probably in this day and age, the first question is, who's my quarterback going to be? Or who is my quarterback on the roster now? Or is there somebody that we're in the mix to get? Because you're always going to hitch your success to, I think, the level of play from that quarterback position. So when you look at those organizations and you look at the situations, I think the Russell Wilson one is really difficult. We saw the sort of the demise or slowing down of his running ability over last season and decision-making, and he just did not look like the same guy. So would you want to go in a situation there where so much of your cap space is tied up with that guy? I don't know. And the other teams are kind of in the same boats, although, you know, I think maybe maybe Arizona would be interesting to him if Kyler Murray's back healthy. I'm sure it would be a kind of a nice project for him to work with a kid with that much ability. But
right.
So I don't think there's one that really jumps out to me that he would say. And I think that's part of the reality for him, is he doesn't want to just take any job. He really wants to land himself at a job where he has a chance to be successful and continue to kind of burnish that legacy.
Colts, by the way, is the one I was forgetting. Mm-hmm. I don't know how I forgot that with the whole Jeff Saturday debacle.
Yeah, right.
But there we go. Okay. All right, let's get to the matter at hand, Duke. Let's get to the games this weekend, the conference championship games. And just as an overall, I think we may have touched on this on Monday with you when we were looking back at the divisional weekend, but as you look at these two matchups in terms of competitiveness, et cetera, Cincinnati, Kansas City, the Niners, and the Eagles, are you foreseeing two great games? Do you think one of them has the potential of maybe being one-sided? What's your overall thought on the games this weekend?
Well, you know, I like to go back and look, but it certainly feels that this year, for the first time in several years, you've got such competitive games that the lines in both cases are less than the field goal, which tells you that, you know, these four teams playing against each other, the two in the AFC and the NFC, they're very, very evenly matched. And I think all season long, we all expected in the AFC it was going to be two of Cincinnati, Kansas City, or Buffalo. And in the NFC, probably it was Dallas, Philadelphia, San Francisco. And so we got, I think, the top four teams. They're very evenly matched. I do think both are going to be extremely competitive.
I go back to, I guess, almost a Brady versus Manning, where you have two ultra-confident quarterbacks. Is your take on this that, first of all, Burrows is just exuding confidence? At the same time, Duke, it feels like Patrick Mahomes can't wait for this game to start. Like, both of these guys, and I don't know if it's friendly, but man, oh man, do they look like they're both confident and fired up for Sunday.
Yeah, and you know what? It is a lot like that Brady Manning era, where sometimes it felt like the game was between the two quarterbacks, even though they obviously are on the field at the same time. But yeah, you've got Mahomes, and Burrow said it there in that clip, right? This is a guy that's played in five consecutive, or will be playing in his fifth consecutive conference championship game, all at home, which means that you've had significant success in the regular season and you've kind of escaped in the playoffs and gotten to this point. But Burrow is kind of otherworldly in his confidence and his sort of just his attitude of bring it on. Doesn't matter where we're playing, doesn't matter who we're playing against. And I really feel like that team, just because of his confidence, the Bengals have just been on such a roll. And I think they firmly believe that they are and should be the favorites in this game.
All right, let's get to the matter at hand. Let's get to the picks. Before we get to that, let's get a score update through two rounds of the playoffs, Hammer. And again, to review.
Not sure we have time, JR.
We pick the spread, we pick straight up, and we pick the over-under as well. So this round, round three, 3 points available for a correct pick. And if you sweep all three, correctly predict all three, you get a 3-point bonus as well. So 12 points available for each game. So 24 points in total. Like this is moving day in terms of the pool, the Gabriel Pizza Cup. Moving day is at hand. So score update, please.
Very close on top with Duke leading with 28 points. JR, you've got 27. I had a massive divisional weekend getting back into the game here with 24. Simmer? Yeah. Simmer.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got 20. You've got 20.
Okay, no, that's okay.
You're in shouting distance. Again, you're going to be, you could be relegated to the CFRA NFL pool unless you pick things up. But okay, let's start with game one, which is the 3:00 kickoff. It is the San Francisco 49ers at the Philadelphia Eagles. First of all, weather at kickoff expected to be cloudy and 11 degrees Celsius. So reasonable weather. San Francisco is in the NFC Championship game for the third time in 4 years. They're 1-1 in their two previous visits. They haven't won the Super Bowl since January the 29th, 1995. Sunday is January the 29th. So that would be the 28th anniversary of the last time they won the Super Bowl. San Francisco is the fifth team to enter the conference championship on a 12-game or more win streak. Three of the four previous times, the team on that streak did advance to the Super Bowl. The Eagles are 15-3. They're, of course, at home. They won the Super Bowl 5 seasons ago. Jalen Hurts leads the league in passing touchdowns of 20 yards or more downfield. The 49ers defense was 25th in passing touchdowns allowed. Injuries of note. Christian McCaffrey has not practiced this week, but said there's no chance he's not playing for the Eagles. Right tackle Lane Johnson playing through a torn adductor. We'll see if he can get through the entire game. The line, according to FanDuel, is Philadelphia by 2.5. It really hasn't moved much all week. The over-under is set at 46.5. So we'll do this, I guess, in reverse order. So, Simmer, you want to go last?
Yeah,
is that
absolutely
correct? Okay. So, Duke, you're first up as the guy on top.
Yeah, boy, those are some interesting stats. And I think this is going to be a titanic defensive struggle. I think both these teams are so talented. But I do think that's that interesting stat that you brought out, JR, and I would have suggested this, that I think the Eagles have the better pure passing quarterback, and they've got better weapons at the receiver position against the only area of the 49ers defense that's a bit suspect in the secondary. So I just think I'm taking the better quarterback, better passing team because of the runs. I think are going to even out. So I'm going to take the Eagles to win, the Eagles to cover, and I think it's going to be a tight defensive kind of battle, so I'll take the under.
Okay, all right. I go second. So, yeah, I think that I agree. I think this is going to be a terrific football game. I think it's probably a field goal game either way. Turnovers will play a huge role, and I don't know. You can never predict how that's going to go, right? But if you do say, well, who's got the better chance of turnovers, and you look at the quarterbacks, to your point, Duke, I have a little more faith in Jalen Hurts than I do in Brock Purdy, who, I mean, he's 7-0 is 7-0. There's no arguing about that. He's done great at protecting the football, but this is a whole new kettle of fish. He's stepping in, A, on the road. He's played 6 of his 8 games at home, and B, let alone a conference championship game. So I'm going to say that Philadelphia is going to turn him over maybe one more time than Jalen Hurts, and that will be the difference. So I, too, will take the Eagles. I, too, will give up points, the 2.5. But unlike you, I actually think there's going to be some scoring in this game, Duke. So I will take the over of 46.5. Hammer.
I was thinking that you were going to play the smart game here and just try to stick around with Duke a little bit.
I'm going with my heart.
And keep the under.
And my head.
And I thought maybe this was going to be an opportunity for me to gain on the both of you because I agree with you absolutely. I think the Eagles are going to win. They're gonna cover. And I do think there's going to be some points on the board here, and I'm taking the over.
Okay. All right. So, Simmer, you got a wide open here for
you,
my
no,
friend.
I got no choice. I'll take the Niners in the upset. I'll take the under, and then obviously I'm taking the Niners and took the spread, so okay. I'll go with that.
All right. Only to make up ground. No reasoning behind it?
No, I don't. You know, in these games like this, it'd just be really interesting on the quarterback side, right? On a guy like Purdy and yeah, I don't know. I logic-wise, I'm just saying, hey, yep. I think it'll be close, but I in a sense of their ability to hang around, how will this guy kind of fare on the road? It's just been a really intriguing story, and I guess deep down, nothing would make me feel better than to see your team lose.
After I didn't allow you because you wanted to jump on
exactly,
the bandwagon.
Exactly.
Right, fair enough. All right, that's the 3 o'clock game, the 6:30 game, Cincinnati at Kansas City. Of course, these two teams met in the AFC Championship game last year. This is the 7th time the two teams will meet in consecutive conference championships and the first time since the Ravens and Patriots did in 2011 and 2012. The Patriots won in 2011. The Ravens won in 2012. Last season's AFC Championship game, of course, Cincinnati overcame an 18-point deficit, the biggest in conference championship history, to win the game in overtime. The Bengals have won 10 games in a row going into this game. Joe Burrow is 3-0 versus Patrick Mahomes, including the playoffs. He's the only quarterback who's beaten Mahomes 3 straight times. Joe Burrow is also 4-0 on the road in the playoffs, and he's been an underdog in each of those games. Kansas City hosting the AFC Championship for a 5th straight season. They are 2-2 in the previous 4. Patrick Mahomes trying to join Tom Brady as the only quarterbacks to go to the Super Bowl 3 times in their first 6 seasons. Injuries, well documented. Patrick Mahomes' high ankle sprain will play. We'll see about mobility. That will be the huge thing with him. And for the Bengals, injuries across the offensive line, like they had against Buffalo, looks like none of those 3 starters that were injured for that game are going to be able to play in this game as well. All right, according to FanDuel, and this one has gone from Kansas City favored to, we're not sure about Mahomes, to the Bengals favored. It's now, Mahomes going to play? As of this morning, it is 1.5. Kansas City favored, and the over-under is 48. Duke, do you want to move that to a half? Just to make sure we don't get a push.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's do that.
All right, you want to go up or down?
Up. No, you guys decide. Yeah, let's go up.
Okay, 48, and we'll make it 48.5. All right, so Duke, you go first. Kansas City favored by 1.5, over under 48.5.
Yeah, it's been quite something to see that line bounce around this week. But to me, the storyline really is that Patrick Mahomes hobbled is not the same Patrick Mahomes that most teams have to face. And when he breaks contain, that's when he gets a lot of his work done. And I just don't think, A, the Bengals will let him do that, and B, I don't think he's going to be physically capable. I think that's just the whole storyline of this game. And so I think Cincinnati's going to go in there and win. I think they have the attitude. They've got the winning streak. They got all that confidence of last year. I like the Bengals to win it, and I think it's going to be relatively easy when I say that, you know, 7 points or less. And I'm going to go with some points in this game, so I think I'll take the over.
Okay, all right. If you look at the template for last year's win by Cincinnati and Kansas City, and that was a healthy Patrick Mahomes, the defensive coordinator with the Bengals, Amaruna,
I believe.
Yeah. Very underrated defensive coordinator. He's got a game plan that works against Patrick Mahomes, and that's basically to drop everybody in coverage and, mm-hmm. you know, kind of limit it. And that worked last year. And now we're taking away potentially at least some of Mahomes' mobility. So I agree. I'm going Cincinnati, and I'm taking the point and a half, obviously, and I'm taking them to win straight up. And I'll go with the under on this one. I'll go just for being a little bit different, but I do think their, you know, defense is going to play a role in this game despite two strong teams. So I will take Cincinnati to win, and I will take the under in that one. All right, Hammer.
Now, you think because of the poll question and that I had...
You love Kansas City.
And that, yeah, it's absolutely not true because I like Cincinnati. I love Joe Burrow, man. He's just oozing confidence. Doesn't care about the crowd. Doesn't care where he plays. He's got all the weapons in the world. Doesn't care if he's down. Doesn't care if he's up in a game. The guy just produces, stays calm, cool, collected. Love him. I'm taking Cincinnati, of course the points then. And I'm not going to agree with you again. I'm taking the over in this one.
Yeah. Okay. All right, fair enough. All right, Simmer, man, this is wide open for you.
Yeah, no, and I did my bold one. I can't argue. When I think about, first of all, from last year when they beat them, that was when they had Tyreek Hill. He's gone. They're going to take away Kelsey because there won't be the mobility on Patrick Mahomes. So, yeah, I'm going to take Cincinnati. Obviously means I'll take the points and... Boy, I guess I'll go over. I'm not real positive on that, but I lots of reasons, as Duke kind of pointed out, that this could really go sideways for Kansas City.
All right, there we go. Predictions in hand. Look forward to it. See what the good people, listeners on our Tool and Equipment Store web poll question. Right now, Bengals versus Eagles is what the people are predicting as well, 42%, followed by Bengals versus Niners, 27%. So, a lot of people, that's collectively 68, 69% of people are on the Bengals to win the eight.
Man. Don't you like the thought of a Hurts, Burrow, Super Bowl? Both guys
I'm okay with Hurts and Mahomes, too. I'm okay with just the Eagles.
But Mahomes is banged up. I want to see two quarterbacks.
He's got 2 weeks if he gets through this game to be back. All right. Duke, how are you watching the game this weekend? Games.
Just the usual. Not with anybody else.
What about your wife? You told us your wife is watching.
Sorry, obviously she's involved. Not her, but not anybody else.
Okay, all right. Peace and quiet, and we wish you sort of good luck on the picks and enjoy the games. Always appreciate it. We'll wrap it all up with you on Monday. Thanks for the time.
Sounds great, guys. Enjoy.
All right, there's Duke Ellingson joining us in the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. Gabriel Pizza, the official pizza of the Ottawa Senators and the official pizza of our Gabriel Pizza Cup. That makes sense. All right, 9:37, we're going to take a break. Come back, we'll set you up for a Sens game day as they're taking on the Maple Leafs tonight at 7, right here on Sports Radio TSN 1200. Welcome back, 9:46 on this Sens game day Friday. 67s as well in action. Pride night tonight down at the rink. Great matchup. London Knights in town. Want to go see a good ice hockey match in person. 67s night, 7 o'clock, TD Place Arena and on 580 CFRA. Clary texts in at 12-1200. Lots of disrespect to my Chiefs on the show this morning. Three straight losses to the Bengals aren't going to sit well with Mahomes and the squad. So I'm predicting a big win on Sunday for the Chiefs. Chiefs-Eagles Super Bowl. Here we come. Cheers, fellas. That's from Clary.
Yeah, and Clary, I got to be honest with you. If Mahomes was healthy, I totally feel that. I feel like, hey, Joe Burrow, just kind of the reaction that last win they had, and did he not say in that last little soundbite, we're coming for you? I mean, he's awful confident fellow, which I love, and it seems very sincere. But, yeah, with Mahomes' leg and take out Hill from last year, and if they eliminate Kelce, and I guess we'll find out probably what JR, the first, you know, set of downs as to where that ankle's realistically at, right?
Yeah.
You know, and a couple of years ago, I can't remember, he had it was more of a foot kind of an ankle injury, right? Like lower than the high ankle sprain. Remember a couple of years ago? He was having a real tough time getting around and suffered through that.
Yeah, he's a gamer, man.
Oh, he is for sure. Yeah. And he can throw. The neat part about him is you watch him throw from any angle. But I just wonder if that'll be enough in a game like this to put up enough points to beat the old Bengals.
Yeah. I don't like the fact that, you did it only because you want to try to catch up. But
yeah.
I don't like the fact that everybody's on my team. Because chances are you guys are wrong.
They pounded the Giants. They had a great year.
I know.
Only losses are primarily when Hurts wasn't in the line.
I keep in my own mind, though, and I don't know who the guy is, and maybe they don't even have somebody tall enough, but I just feel like Purdy rolling out and catching somebody in the back of the end zone, kind of a Dwight Clark moment.
I don't think JR likes being the favorite. I think that's what it is. Like being the favorite.
But it is different, too, when you're, and when I was on the Pats bandwagon,
yep.
My God, that going into that Super Bowl, like not very often when I'm a super fan of a team, which is not a lot. But no, my point being is I don't get nervous necessarily or overconfident, but I was sure the year the Patriots were unbeaten, they were just going to roll through the Giants. And man, oh man, that one hurt back in the day.
I always get them confused. Was that the one that the helmet catch and then touchdown the last minute? That was the undefeated one?
Yeah, David Tyree. Yeah. That was really the defensive group with Strahan there. They were just coming after the Patriots But hey, having said that one of the greatest plays of all time, and not just the catch, guys, when you go back and watch that. How the heck Eli Manning didn't get sacked on that play was incredible, right?
Yeah. I mean, or the fact that it wasn't blown down for in the grass.
That's true, yeah.
Because
the
struggle was real for what seemed like a long period of time in real time.
Yeah.
Okay, as we mentioned, Sens and Leafs going out tonight. Sens and Habs tomorrow back here in Ottawa. So, Kevin, the only lineup note, because the Sens didn't practice yesterday, is Kevin Mandalizzi has been called up. He will back up tonight. Anton Forsberg, I guess the only question is he going to play tomorrow? And it may be dependent on what happens tonight. You know, we talked about this earlier. Yeah. My take on it is I would roll with Forsberg in both games. Yeah. First of all, fatigue is not going to be an issue. It's not like this guy's played a million games this year. Yeah. And I also think that, you know, and look, I know some people would like to, everybody wants to see the new shiny toy. Not that Mandalizzi, I don't think, has been, you know, everybody thinks of him as the great young prospect or anything, or that many people are excited to see him. It's just, everybody, when the season, let's call up everybody. It's down the minors. I want to get a look at the guy. Yeah. The guy's played, like, really, honestly, hardly at all, even at the minor pro level. So, and I know Montreal is half made up of the Laval Rocket right now. They're not a juggernaut by anything, but also don't want to throw the kid in there if he's not ready.
Interesting.
I just think, look. The Sens want to be competitive. They want to win their home games. Yeah. I would be rolling with Forsberg in both games.
Yeah, it's a fun debate, JR. My other theory and thought, and I think I guess back to almost Patrick Waugh. Now, he was playing for Montreal, but how cool would it be on a Saturday night hockey night in Canada and you have a French-Canadian kid gets an opportunity to go in and play the Montreal Canadiens? That, to me, is fun. Now, I guess part of it could depend on how Forsberg plays, but I agree with you, no issue. But, guys, how times have changed, because we will go back to the second night of the season, opening night, on Matt Murray, I won't say pulling the shoe, JR, but him getting hurt.
Oh, that's right.
The morning of the skate of the Ottawa Senators, and they put him on IR, I think, before he got to the dressing room. I thought, there's no way this is going to work out. They already see that this guy's hurt. Well, he's come through the other side, played great. So I think that's also one of the questions. I would assume that he goes against his former club tonight, although Samsonov's been playing some great hockey.
Samsonov not started, two or three games in a row for Toronto, and he is unbeaten in regulation at home.
Murray had the real bad start at home last time, did he not?
And Toronto plays tonight and plays Sunday, so it's not a back-to-back for them. So, I don't know, maybe they just could continue to roll with a somewhat hot hand. Murray demands the net, goes into Kiefer's office and says, I have to play.
Yeah.
Play me or else.
Yeah. No, that's a good point.
Like when the Sens visited Pittsburgh and he watched the game from the press box
was healthy enough to play the next game.
And actually played great in Washington.
Yeah.
But
that
I
started the run of good play that he had.
About 6 weeks. But honestly, go back to that game and I just thought, oh my God, they've already had enough of this fella. So yeah, it'd be interesting too. And I would assume from a Sens side and everybody else there, you'd like to see Matt Murray tonight and just be thinking high glove. That's what you're looking for when you're facing Matt Murray.
All right, so that's 7 o'clock, 5 o'clock pregame show here on TSN 1200, and then back home, as we said, to face Montreal. And the Habs coming off a 4-3 loss in overtime to Detroit last night. Okay, let's get some texts at 1200. Where is that text I wanted to read? Oh, shoot. I set it aside.
A little football action?
Here we go. No, I was on the hunt. Okay. Do you guys really, this is not the one I wanted to read, but I found it, and I'll go find the other one while you answer. Do you guys really think adding one D-man or goalie will make the Sens a legit playoff contender next year? Seems like they need an entire makeover of the bottom six and a couple of defensemen. Seems like that's a lot to do in one summer. That's from Unsigned.
You know what, Unsigned? There's no doubt. There are more questions and a few things as you relate to the roster guys. I think the DeBrincat question of how much money you put into the wing, good players, other things. But the thing that is really going to be interesting to watch, JR, is the allocation of salary and just assumption they're going to spend close to it. You still have the Zaitsev 4.5. You've got $5 million in dead money. And this whole tying of Norris to this huge contract for the next 7 years, JR, man, oh, man, that's a slot that, as it sits right now, you're not going out and spending Josh Norris's $8 million. You are counting on him to come back and be a good player for you. So how you then shift around the other pieces, and God forbid he comes back and can't stay healthy during the contract, that, and then back to the blue line, yeah, don't disagree. And then on the goaltending, there's still still a lot of nice pieces in place, but there are certainly a lot of question marks here to take this thing next level like we kind of thought it would be this going in this year.
Okay, I found the text I want to read. Going to read it in a second, but we got another prize. We got one final prize to give away this week. Final pair of tickets for this week, at least. To the World Men's Curling Championship coming to TD Place Arena April 1st and 9th. Here is the question. Which country is the only one to have won both the Olympic and the World Men's Curling title in the same year? Which country is the only one to have won the Olympic title and the world title in the same year? Men's. Text us the correct answer at 12-1200. Standard messaging rates apply. Along with your first and last name. Do it in the next 4 minutes. Clock's ticking. We'll draw one name from among all the correct answers, and that person is on their way with some tickets to the World Men's Curling Championship coming to Ottawa April 1st to 9th.
Is that a bit of a trick question, Jer?
If I said it was, if I confirmed it was a trick question, then people wouldn't answer how they want to answer.
I'm just trying to scan through and... trying to figure that out. So, okay.
Morning, lads. Hot debate this morning with my buddy.
Yeah.
Would you rather have Chychrun and Demko or just DeBrincat on the Sens next year? Salaries and cap hit on both sides are essentially the same. Thanks, boys. Have a beauty weekend. Okay. Before you answer, Simmer, a couple of things on this. Okay. First of all, DeBrincat's, I think a lot of people forget this because they're fixated on the $9 million. His cap hit is only 6.4.
Yeah.
Okay. So his cap, so collectively, the cap hit is not the same. Demko and Chychrun are 9.4. DeBrincat is 6.4. So there is a difference. Now, salary-wise, there's more of a match. Okay, there's that. The other thing that's forgotten in this equation is the acquisition cost it would, right? You've got DeBrincat. You spent the first, second, and third to get him. If you said, if you said, well, let's bring in Chychrun and Demko, that's going to cost you big time in terms of what you had. But all that to say, Simmer, it's an either-or proposition.
Yeah.
From the good listener.
Yeah.
DeBrincat or Demko and Chychrun?
Oh, Demko and Chychrun all day long, JR. But to your point, now what will you have to remember, though, both in dollars out the door, although that doesn't matter, but DeBrincat's salary cap hit this year will be $9 million, right, coming up next year. Like, is he when he takes when he takes his qualifying offer, it resets.
If it's
to $9
only
million.
A qualifying offer, if he signs a long term, there's a chance it could be slightly lower.
But it's going to be, it's not going to
be big.
Yeah, that's all. But again, also to the point of, now what have you sent out? Neither team is going to be interested in DeBrincat. So you've used a lot of assets for Chychrun and Demko, and then I don't know what's happened with the case of DeBrincat. So absolutely, I'd take the other two. But like I say, I think we all realize that's not realistic. But just for the argument itself, I'd take the defenseman, the goaltender for sure.
There was a lot of, a lot of social media stuff, and probably started because I don't want to give us credit. I mean, it's been a good debate about DeBrincat and the season he's been having. And I think most Sens fans still say it's a great trade for Ottawa. They want to sign him to a long-term extension, despite the dollars that it's going to take for sure on that. And I forget what point I was going to make because it's the end of the week.
No, but also, Jared, and to it, I like DeBrincat. I know there's a better player there. it's not one of those ones that's been terrible. You have a number of players. The only players that are, you know, I guess Stutzla to Sanderson, I can't go through the roster, JR, and point out a bunch of guys that have played above expectation, right? Brady was. Now it's kind of leveled off. But Batherson below. DeBrincat below. Shabbat to below. Below. you know, so those things, to me, you factor in. What will Alex DeBrincat? Alex DeBrincat will be a very good player for a long time. The real question as you go 8 to Stutzla, 8 north of 8, 8 to Norris, north of 8 to Tkachuk. Now you start to factor in a couple more years of Claude Giroux at 6.5. You got Shabbat at 8, and then you're going to do something with Sanderson. You know, again, realistically, there's only so much money to go around. And then philosophically, do you want to tie that into DeBrincat right now? I would kind of assume, even from a depth standpoint, I'm not saying I'd take Connor Brown, one other guy, but if you said realistically you could get a really serviceable, you know, second to third line winger and a legitimate top four defenseman for that same money that you're paying to DeBrincat, JR, you know, I would spread it around that way. I this is one of the problems of why they've become so top heavy this year.
Mm-hmm. And now I remember the point that I was going to make, okay, that some other people have is, you know, I think going into this season, this wouldn't have been a debate, but now given his play this year, is Drake Batherson, right? If you have to move... Yeah. A forward that makes pretty good dough, given his year this year, and maybe what we're seeing. This has got to be rock bottom in terms of his defense, his two-way game for Drake Batherson. It can't be any worse than it is this year. You would hope for better, but you know, is he more of a one-dimensional player than we had thought? This year certainly seems to, and the one dimension is essentially only on the power play. It's not even 5-on-5 strength, right? He's a good power play player, but that seems to be it. Not that good 5-on-5 this year, and it's been a real struggle defensively, as his plus minus would suggest. So now he makes $5
million. Yeah.
That's a pretty, you know, leading into this year, everybody would have said great contract, and probably still is a good contract, even given what's transpired this year. But is to bring, if you want to lop one higher salary guy off to kind of, you know, find the money to fix the defense and the other deficiencies that you have, is maybe that more on the table than a DeBrincat.
Yeah, I hate to go with it's not even close, but like Alex DeBrincat is a far better player than Drake Batherson, JR, and that's even with both of them playing at their peak. I mean, DeBrincat is an excellent hockey player, but the factor that you put in, that's a huge factor. I mean,
8.5. Let's put DeBrincat at 8.5 for sake of argument, and you got Batherson at 5.
Yeah, that to me is factored in. But I also believe, and again, I do not think being physical to Drake Batherson comes normal, but I still know there's a better hockey player in there. And I can't for the life of me understand why he can't be good defensively. He's a smart hockey player. He can skate. He's got size. So I do look at that and think that that's very correctable. So I would be really nervous as another player to kind of flip out based on especially the salary. But if you just said straight up, yeah, I'd take DeBrincat. DeBrincat really has a much better ability to make others around him better, Jer. I think that's something we've seen this year, right? I didn't realize what a good playmaker he was. So, but when it comes to the salary, it's a big factor. That's a big difference in salary.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you just want to make it real easy to look at. Would you rather have Batherson and a $3.5 million defenseman? A $3.5 million defenseman, if he's the right guy, that's a top, you know, that's a good defensive top four defensive defenseman kind of guy.
Yeah, for sure.
A real good match for either a Sanderson or a Shabbat. The right guy, that's a $3.5 to $4 million is what they're making.
Those types, I mean, in the open market, those are get her done guys, Jer.
Get her done. Good way to finish the week. A get her done guy. Love it. All right, who's the winner of our curling tickets?
Paul Gowan.
Nice job, Paul. How many wrong answers did we have?
A few.
Two simmers. Is this a trick question?
We had Norway.
Okay.
Uzbekistan.
Did you have a lot of Canada?
No, did not have a lot of Canada.
Really?
Yeah.
So more people had the correct answer?
Yeah.
Okay, which is the only country that has won the Olympics and men's the World Men's Curling Championship in the same year was, yes, Simmer?
Sweden?
Sweden is correct, yes. Okay. You looked it up and right.
No, I didn't. No, a pure guess here. I just, when you, the way you framed it, I, you know, 30 years ago, you'd say, it's Canada's the answer all day long. So I was trying to think, God, there's got to be somebody out there other than Canada.
It actually happened last year, 2022. All right, so congratulations to our winner, who has won a pair of single-draw tickets to the World Men's Curling Championship happening at TD Place Arena, April 1st to 9th. Tickets for all draws are available at curling.ca/tickets.